Hello and welcome to Hell is in the Cloud. It's still the second day. We have another bunch of excellent guests with us. Marco, who do we have today?
Yes, we have Alex Weinert and Ethan Basari. Maybe give us a quick introduction, who you are, what you are responsible for. Alex.
All right. So I'm Alex Weinert. I'm the VP for Identity Security at Microsoft. My team is responsible for preventing unauthorized access and fraud across all the accounts that Microsoft takes care of, whether that's consumer accounts, like the ones that are used to access things like Xbox, or for enterprise accounts, which is like all of the organizations that work with Entra ID or have Office accounts or Azure accounts, any of those kinds of things. So we look kind of broadly across that and everything from how we secure the system to the tools that we give customers to secure their deployments, all the way out to the things that we do automatically for customers. I've been at Microsoft for 28 years.
Wow.
I've been doing this job or a flavor of it for maybe 10, 15
years. Okay. You're based out of Seattle?
I'm out of Redmond, yeah. My office is in Redmond.
Okay. Also for the whole 28 years?
Yeah, I've been.
Wow. Okay. Very constant. Ethan.
Yeah, my name is Ethan Basri. I'm a product manager on Alex's team, and I work primarily on identity protection, which is our enterprise threat detection and response system. So I work a lot with finding attacks, working with our data scientists and engineers to block them, to mitigate the risks of those sorts of things happening. And I've been at Microsoft for 6 years, previously working with Microsoft as a contractor for about six before that. So I'm an accountant, call it 12. And I'm also based in Redmond. So yeah, good to be with you guys.
Cool. Nice. Thank you. So you just said that you are also responsible for the consumer part. I can imagine that you are learning quite a lot from that part, because there are so many consumers out there, so many consumer identities out there.
Yeah.
And you are gathering signals, I guess, about anomalies and stuff like that. So do you learn from that? Also from
there's two major things that we gain. So for me, this journey started actually in Xbox. I started doing anti-fraud and anti-compromise in Xbox. And then we're asked to take it on for the broader consumer ecosystem. So in 2012, I came over and began the identity security team for what was then Microsoft Live ID, right? And now Microsoft Account, right? And the things that we get out of that, one is that we have a tremendous amount of signal that is actually, you know, non-targeted, or it is targeted at us, but like, because you can use any email address you want, right? You might have a corporate email address that can be aimed at us, or a Google address, or you know, whatever kind of address, right? And so when the attackers come and they do these big bulk attacks, right, they like to use systems like that that accept any email address. So they'll come after, you know, the big consumer vendors that allow that. Okay. And that allows us to essentially create a almost like a honey trap, right? Like where people come to us and they say, okay, let's say I breached, you know, a million credentials from some site, right? I want to go see if they're valid. So one of the ways that I test that is I'll come to our site, right, and they'll try to run them all against our site to see which ones match. We have very good detection for that kind of attack, but we're able to use that to then very quickly figure out, okay, an attacker now has your corporate credentials, and that's where like a lot of our leak credentials detection comes from. So having that consumer ecosystem is really a powerful tool for us in terms of detection, and that's just one example. The other really major thing that consumer does for us is it allows us to try things, right? So way back in 2013, we decided, hey, we're going to require MFA for all users. And we were able to do that because we're essentially the admins for our own site, right? Yeah. So we can go do these policies. And even today, like our consumer compromise rate is much lower than the enterprise overall because we control those policies. We can apply risk-based policies. We can apply MFA. We can restrict, you know, insecure protocols. Some of the things we do in security defaults now actually all originated in consumers, right? Yeah. And so many of the ideas that we bring to enterprise actually are incubated in consumer, like things like passkey, right, where we can go and experiment with that. Going to passwordless accounts, you know, lots of security innovation like the sign-in stuff that actually started in consumer and then it was brought over to enterprise. So we are able to innovate in that space because we are the admins for it, and we can take the support hit and everything else. And then once it works, we can bring it over.
Okay, because that was what I'm wondering about. I'm a long-time Xbox user, and I think that is what I've seen first, the authenticator app that let me not type in my password. And it also was not only security, it was convenience to log into my Xbox, and I just had to hit it online. I thought this was really great. And so what you're telling us that this is the incubation part. This is where you can try out, and this is now, that's what I do with my admin accounts, with my normal account. I'm trying to leverage exactly these things once we move to passkeys and stuff like this. So this is really, really interesting.
So could you talk a little bit about what you are working on at the moment? So what are you talking about at Ignite at the moment? What's part of your presentations? What are the hot topics you're working on at the moment?
Yeah, I think there's two things, and I'll speak to one, and I'll leave it to Eitan to speak to the other one. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I'm really excited that we're talking about, it's really part of the Secure Future Initiative and part of our overall journey. As we look at security posture and identity, it's been a really, really difficult journey. When we look at, for example, Microsoft Incident Response, this is the team that goes and works directly with customers and they get breached. A huge number of the breaches they're dealing with are unpatched, old versions of Windows Server running into
the dark team you're talking about?
Yeah,
the dark
team? Well, it used to be called BART, it's now Microsoft Incident Response. Okay. It used to be called Azure AD, now it's called Entra.
Okay.
So we just like to change.
Absolutely.
I used to be called Alex. So I'm still called Alex. When we think about the difficulty there, where we have customers that are dealing with, in some cases, 10, 15-year-old server deployments that are unpatched, they don't have the resources. And this isn't, we look at the overall resource shortage in cyber and tech, it's significant. So customers' ability to kind of maintain currency on their deployments has been really hard. We look at MFA, which we've been promoting really aggressively since probably 2012, and we're up to today, we'll be almost exactly 38%. We'll hit 38% probably today in terms of adoption. But that's really pretty poor across the enterprise space, right? When we know that this is the most important thing you can do as a 99.2% risk reduction. And so what we've seen is that we really have to find ways to help people keep up, right? And so in the team, probably not the most charming name, but in the team we call this the pit of success, right? How do we create an environment that's secure, and only if the customer makes explicit effort do they become insecure? So this is the opposite of the way it used to be, right? It used to be now I have to pick an MFA product, and I have to deploy that product, I have to configure that product, roll that out. And with security defaults, we basically say, hey, you're born with MFA, you're always going to have MFA. You have to do work if you want to turn it off. So that has worked really, really well for us. In fact, half of our MFA number, when we look at that 38%, about half of that is actually because of security defaults. It's because of turning it on for customers. So it's had a huge, huge impact, right? But when you look at the numbers of users, not the number of customers, but the number of users, there's a disproportionate number of users that sit in these very large customers, these customers that have 100,000, 200,000, a million, user objects, right? And those folks, you can't simply say, we're going to throw away your security policies and do our own, right? So the question is, how do we layer on best practices into those organizations and still help them on their journey, right? So there's some good examples of this, kind of in precursor work. We have work that essentially helps you pick the best auth method. When your user signs in, they'll be presented with the best available authentication method, right? We have the automatic registration for the Authenticator app. The Authenticator app itself has been evolving to deal with things like MFA fatigue attacks, right, and phishing. So it is presenting the number matching and the map and the and all that stuff. It's all part of this journey where customers didn't have to redeploy the Authenticator. If they have it, they have it. It's, by the way, now the most common authentication method for MFA. The Authenticator has now displaced SMS finally.
Great.
Yeah, so it's by far, and it's moving very fast. And so the idea is, how do we create these frames where we can help customers stay on top of that security policy, because the attackers are evolving fast, right? So this is the first thing. And so moving now from security defaults, which applies to everybody, to very simple customers and trial users and everything, but they can't really tune it, right? It's kind of we're taking the wheel, we'll take care of it. Then you have these large customers, and they can't use that because they need more control. So Microsoft Managed Policies is the way that we fix that. And so for customers that are larger, right, and that have conditional access, we were able to say, great, here's the canonical conditional access policy you should be using for this. You can exclude users, you can modify the policy, you can say no, right? You have a lot of control inside of that frame. But what history teaches us is when we do programs like this, about 85% of users maintain the setting, right? So if we can get 85% of our existing base to adopt MFA, we will crack from 38% now to probably north of 80% MFA utilization by the end of the next calendar year, right? So that's an extremely exciting
thing. Sure.
And the other thing that we can't not talk about right now is generative. And I'm going to actually let Eitan talk about generative.
Yeah. And I just want to add on to one thing you mentioned around managed policies. It's something I've been working on a lot lately around the risk policies. I mentioned identity protection and how we have customers out there who are licensed for this sort of thing, but just haven't taken advantage of it for one reason or another. And it is great that we have this 85% retention rate, because there's that still that 50% that maybe we didn't get it right, or maybe they're just not ready for some reason. But I would just emphasize how much time and care that our team has put in to making sure that customers are technically ready for those policies. So if I give the example of a risk policy, the customer has to have Entra ID Premium 2. They have to have everybody registered for multi-factor authentication. Because if we were to deploy that policy with the managed policies and not have everybody, we'd either throw people out of compliance on their license, or we have them blocked. Because if we deploy a sign-in policy and they're not, end user isn't registered for multi-factor, they're going to get blocked.
Yeah.
So my point is we're creating these policies that are extremely low friction. We're not going to be blocking people out of these policies. This is about putting the right security at the right time. And so I would emphasize for anyone who's listening or watching this sort of thing, you get one of those policies, like, strongly consider leveraging that policy or cloning it and adjusting it to the thing that you need, and not just opting out of it. Because it's really for your benefit that we're doing this sort of thing, to really nudge, in a healthy way, nudge the entire industry forward in terms of a better posture.
We think about another example of the policy is you should have MFA for an admin accessing an admin portal. Like, this should not be an argument.
No, not at all.
This is very straightforward.
Yeah.
On the Gen AI piece, I think there's a similar spirit that we pursued. There's, you know, infinite scenarios that you could go through with Gen AI, and we're living in a very historic time in the industry in terms of, you know, potential. And I think Ignite has been largely, you know, amplifying the opportunity there.
Absolutely. When you take a look at the keynote, Copilot.
Your sweatshirt is highlighting that. My guiding principle for this in the security space is, before everything else, be right. Because in security, there's a very low margin for error. And the concept of generative AI is probabilistic and based off of, you know, basically guessing, right, using an existing data set.
Yeah.
I have to be very careful, especially in the context of a real incident, how much hallucination, if any, we will tolerate versus the groundedness in the actual data.
Mm-hmm.
So we've just announced a new capability in identity protection that will generate a summary of a risky user. Mm-hmm. One of the top questions that we've gotten over the years, identity protection has been around for 8 years more, has been, why is a user marked for risk? Right? Mm-hmm. Because we have a higher tiered system of alerts that are the foundation, and then everything rolls up to an account, either a user or a workload identity. Right? So why is the user at risk, right? And usually it would take, I don't know, 4 to 6 clicks to understand that, and you'd have to know to click, and there'd be all, you know, that's just the way the product was built. And it's a good, the product is structured in a good way, but the experience has not always been so clear. And so what we decided to do is to just give a simple summary. So within 7 seconds, the most recent alerts on a particular user will be quickly summarized and highlighted so that the administrator can quickly understand why the account was flagged for risk. And going back to the posture, immediately recommending the conditional access policies that are appropriate to mitigate. And so next time around, that user is not going to get flagged for risk. They're going to be able to auto-resolve. Right? Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that I think underlying your point about posture was auto-remediation. Taking the burden off of the SOC team and having the end user be able to auto-remediate either with MFA if it's on sign-in risk, or with a password reset if it's on high user risk.
Okay.
So that's sort of the pit of success that we're trying to guide with Copilot, as well as to say, let us give you that clarity and that groundedness and why this person was flagged risk, and the next step is avoid it.
Yeah. I mean, with password reset, you have another, burden or whatever. You have to introduce self-service password reset in the organization. So this is another thing that customers, of course,
have a solution for that.
Yeah?
Get rid of passwords.
Get rid of, passwords. Exactly.
That turns out to be a great solution for password.
The question will then, what would be the mitigation reset password if you don't have a password? So I think
we're working on that. But I think that, I mean, really, when we look at the incredible surge in attacks that we have that are password related, like the system automatically deflects attacks that are, you know, there's sort of low, medium, high, and then what we call ultra high, like this extreme threshold where no sane person would ever allow the request, right? And it has almost no false positives, right? And that is things like a brand new IP address wakes up and starts laundering tens of thousands of accounts with a very high, you know, login success failure rate. Yeah. Well, we're going to block all that stuff. We'll remember which ones they got right, but we block all of it, right? And when we do that, you'll never see it. Like, it doesn't go in your logs. You don't worry about it, right? But the those attacks, which have gone from, I think it was 300 a second in 2020, and is now running at like 4,000 a second in 2020.
Okay, that's
right, a second, yeah. Right? So it's like we're in this air, like in the air we breathe is password attacks, mm-hmm. right? So the number one thing you can do to secure your organization is get rid of that weak link. That link is like, it is provably non-effective. There's nothing you're going to do about it. How many of the password managers have been breached in the last couple of years?
Yeah.
Even if you go to that extreme level where you're training your user to use another piece of software, wait a minute, I need an app to remember my credential that I hope is secure and not interceptable. Well, that's passkey. That's FIDO. That's the authenticator app, right? Like, that's not a password. The password manager doesn't do that, right? So we need the relying parties, the apps, to all get on board and say, hey, we're accepting passkeys.
Yeah.
We're accepting these new strong credentials. And then we need to recognize that we're not going to train users. People are like, but I have a passphrase. Okay, so I wrote a paper about this a long time ago, and nothing has changed except for the GPUs have gotten faster, so the situation is worse, so the attacks have gotten faster. But there's no string you can come up with as a human, right, that some other human hasn't come up with. I'm sorry. You're not as unique as you think you are, right?
Exactly.
So anything you can remember in your head, somebody else has already picked as a password, and it has already been breached, and it's already in the breach corpuses. So there's literally nothing you can think of. It's like, I'm like, pair painting, because there's a pair painting on that wall over there, right? Like, pair painting, that's unique. No, it's not. Somebody has thought of that. Like, somebody has sat in a room like this and thought of that as their password,
exactly. Right?
And that's been breached, and it's in the breach corpus, which means it's going to go through the brute force test. And there's, like, a password cannot be made secure. The only thing that secures the password is that it essentially becomes the first of two factors. But that factor, that password factor, can be compromised very quickly.
Yeah.
The industry has invested tremendously in very high usability, very high security authentication that is designed for authentication. It's the first time we've actually had something designed for digital authentication using, you know, PKI and protecting us against user errors like getting phished, right?
Yeah.
And you can get phished with anything that's not phishing resistant, which means that you're doing this certificate-based key release that is, you know, very protected. Passkey is now built into the Apple. It's built into the Android platforms, right? And so any phone you buy that's current is going to have this thing built in, and increasingly applications are, and websites are starting to adopt it. So that's the future. Like, it's not better passwords. It's not password managers as much as I think it's useful. you're not as clever as you think you are. Yeah. Like, you know, password rules don't work.
So that's also the vision for Microsoft?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, we've been driving hard. I mean, we were authors on the FIDO standard. Windows Hello was actually an early implementation around that idea. We support passkeys in our platforms. The authenticator, which our team is responsible for, will become essentially a passkey provider in the platform. So our hope is that we are going to convert, under the covers, essentially convert all of our, you know, many hundreds of millions of users of the authenticator, right? And again, the majority of enterprise authentication now is being done through the authenticator, right? So that we can convert those all to phishing resistant without them having to do anything. Like, we want to make that an extremely smooth experience where the security level just goes up, which will be the next logical step in...
By leveraging passkey technology.
Yeah, so both Apple and Alphabet have essentially put in the platform a pluggability, like, just like you would for a password manager, right? So you get a password plugin, passkey plugin. So we're going to do the passkey plugin route. So the authenticator will just plug itself into that API set.
Oh, okay.
And then we'll get the full cryptographic benefits of passkey.
Okay, and that will leverage all of the, as you mentioned, all of the currently existing users of this, because you mentioned the journey to get them there was really, really hard,
right.
And it should not give them another step, and they will opt out of it.
I believe the future of authentication outside of highly regulated environments is software-based, you know, application-based authentication.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the reason for that is what we're seeing in just the last year, where we've made three security innovations in the authenticator. To respond to attacks, right? And then we're about to do this fourth with passkey. When you look at the ability to respond like that, imagine if you had a hardware-based token. You had to go out and you had to say, I'm sorry, everybody, give me your old one back, we're going to give you the new one. Now give me your old back, and we're going to give you the new one.
Okay.
You have to go and do that reissuance every time, or everybody change your phone number. Like, if you have to go through that user journey of like, okay, let's stop and re-register, and that's the way you fix things, it's just too slow, and people won't do it. So they remain vulnerable to those attacks. But if we have a software frame that we can adjust inside of, right? It's like your user knows they're using the authenticator, right? They're using the software-based authenticator. The software-based authenticator can adapt to attacks. It can adapt for better usability, right? We can make changes within that frame. User doesn't have to re-register. The org doesn't have to do another campaign. Yeah. It can be managed inside that frame. It's been really successful at driving down attacks and increasing. So that's kind of the future as far as the future.
So we are also an MSSP. We are managed SOC provider for our customers. And this is exactly what we need because man in the middle attacks, adversary in the middle attacks, this is what we are seeing every day. And what really is still successful, you also talked about MFA fatigue, and all this stuff has to go away when people are using phishing resistant MFA technology. So I mean, we are not there yet, right? We are not there yet.
Close.
What do you think? What prevents people? What prevents customers from going into this direction? Because of course we see a big range of technology differences when you look at also your customers, I guess.
Well, actually, I've been talking a lot, so let me let Eitan have the first crack.
What is the question?
What is people? I mean, I have an opinion on that too. But what is people preventing from or holding back from going to this technology, to going to passwordless? There are big differences between our customers in terms of how modern they are in technology. So many of them still haven't, as you just said, and many of them haven't even rolled out MFA. So now we are asking for the next thing. So what do you think is holding them back at the moment?
I think there's a number of things that, I mean, it's a range. Being a large company like Microsoft, you see every flavor of it. So sometimes they don't have our MFA, but they have a different MFA, right? Or maybe they're doing like an on-prem MFA. Sometimes they've got a different identity provider and they're just that sort of federating through Microsoft.
All those account in that 38% stuff.
You've got some places that haven't done the device that can support FIDO yet. So maybe there's too many unmanaged devices to be able to deal with that sort of thing. There's also issues around one of the big drivers that we've seen has been regulatory forces. So in the States, we've seen President Biden's executive order on cybersecurity that has been requiring phishing-resistant authentication methods. So we've seen tons of adoption, not just for FIDO, but also for cert-based authentication, which is also under the umbrella of phishing-resistant auth methods. So sometimes the regulation can have a very positive effect in creating that sort of urgency around it. We get the added benefits that by going to phishing-resistant auth methods, you're starting to mitigate token theft, right? Adversary in the middle attacks and things like that, because now you've just cut off one of the techniques. Right? There are other techniques, of course, but that particular one is not.
In our experience, another driver is also an successful attack, actually. So people get very focused.
That's a bummer when that's the trigger. I would give a simpler answer. I think maybe it's a more complex answer. In some sense, it's a fear. It's fear of user response, right? And we have fear of it, impacting productivity, fear of slowing down the user base, fear of users complaining, fear of help desk costs skyrocketing, right? And for many years, cyber attacks were effectively limited to espionage, right? There was some form of I got into your email, I read your mail, I maybe got some more botnets into your network. But if you think about I have some botnets running in my network, it doesn't really affect me that much. Because what this PC is infected, it's attacking somebody else, right? So it's not that big a deal. It's a little bit of compute power. If I have somebody reading my email, I can kind of pretend like they didn't see anything too bad, or I can, it's very vague. Somebody might have seen the secret plans, or I'm not sure if they saw the secret plans. Or what are we gonna, I'm not really sure what to do. So I think leadership has been able to kind of la 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 la, closing my eyes and not thinking about the attacks, right? Ransomware has changed that game. Right, ransomware is now my business screeches to a halt, and I go out of business. Everything stops, right? Yeah. And so we saw ransomware actually start to change this equation, where people start saying, "Wait a minute, I can't be cavalier about this, or I can't ignore these cyber attacks. They're actually really critical." So we've had a place where we've essentially had a lot of companies, to say it a little bit bluntly, have allowed cyber attacks to proceed because the consequences of those attacks for companies were very small. And then when you look at the risk benefit, the risk of I'm going to reduce productivity, I'm going to affect my users, for what? Well, I don't think I really got attacked last year, or if I did, I'm not really sure what the impact was, or maybe, but now it's you're going to get ransomware, it's going to stop your business, it's going to destroy your business. Mm. And so you, what do you do about that? Well, it's a very complex problem, right? And like, how do I be sure I can't be ransomware? So instead of like trying to deterministically solve that problem, which is maybe arguably impossible, you go buy insurance. What does the insurance company tell you? The first thing they tell you is, we will not insure if you don't have MFA, right? So we start seeing this MFA takeoff where this, in this weird world where the ransomware people are kind of our friends and that they're getting people to find MFA. The systems that are attached, like when we think about what happened leading up to, you know, 2020 when the pandemic hit, we were already on this big digital transformation where we saw this competitive mandate where companies that had done digital transformation, that had moved their analog systems into cloud digital systems, who had better user data, had better customization, you know, better order tracking, better service, right, were getting better business and they were succeeding. There were businesses that were hanging on. They're like, nope, I'm the, you know, I'm the small shop and I still write paper receipts and I still only take cash payments, right? But when the pandemic hit, that went away. There was no surviving the pandemic in the world where you didn't go to digital transformation. The net effect of that is that virtually every system you can think of, everything you have interacted with, like the glasses on your face, you probably ordered them online or you had some online order tracking. Like that phone over there that's filming us, like definitely, you know, like digital transformation is all over it. Like this hotel booked with online system, you name it, right? And that includes medical systems, it includes military systems, it includes infrastructure systems. So if I'm an attacker, and all those systems, by the way, are remote digital systems, all of them need identity to access them, which means that the most like impactful thing you can do as an attacker for any target you want, whether you want a financial system, you want to do sabotage, you want to do military intervention, whatever it is to learn how to break identities, right? And so the game has now changed completely. We see like nations attacking companies or nations attacking other nations to get through this digital identity stuff. And so it's a completely different game. And we can't say, oh, well, maybe they're in my mail or, oh, maybe they have a botnet on my network. Now it's like, no, it can end your business or it can impact human lives. And we have to take this much, much more seriously. So I think if we can get that into our heads, then we can look at that as the offset for this friction problem. And then the friction problem, honestly, is nonsense. Like when you, when we see, I worked with a customer, a financial customer, who was compromised. And they, we had been arguing with them for 4 years, please turn on MFA.
Okay.
And and then they had, and this is, this happened a while back, but very large, you would know them, financial customer, right? And they had done a thing where they had done VPNs to protect their systems, which, like in the moment the VPN was deployed, it was pretty secure. But of course, systems degrade over time. And, you know, if you're not keeping up with them when they weren't. But they had an executive who traveled to another country, lost their phone, bought a new phone, and could not get the cert onto the new phone. They weren't in a place where they could do it. So this executive called, yells at IT and says, make an exception for my phone. So they said, okay, well, what model of phone is it? It's this model of phone. And then, you know, and then what location? And so like, so you could VPN into this one location on that model of phone without the cert, right? Well, the attackers figured this out. How they figured it out, I don't know, but the attackers figured this out. 2 years after that exception was made for that executive who was only in that country for a week, that exception was still in place in the VPN. 2 years later, the attackers came in through that exception. And they basically got pervasive access inside of this organization and started transferring money. So then the CISO called and like, help, what do we do? And I said, turn on MFA, right? So it was on a summer holiday weekend, like sitting at my dining room table. And I said, like, you know, give me access, give me remote access to your environment. I'll turn it on for you. And we turned it on. They had resisted us for 4 years talking about user friction. The guy calls us back, says, first of all, to stop the attack. And then secondly, we didn't get any user complaints.
Your users are
using MFA. They're using it to access their email. They're using it to access their gaming systems. They're using, like, it's
their own banking.
Yeah, their own banking. Like, everybody's doing it. Like, the argument that MFA is friction that you can't bear, especially when the alternative is your business stops or traffic stops or electricity stops or medical care stops, like, it's just not an acceptable, in my mind, it's not an acceptable excuse. So I say, like, if you're responsible for security for an organization and you don't have pervasive usage of MFA for your users, you have not entered the game yet. You haven't even stepped into the ring. You're not taking the game seriously.
And in most cases,
I do think there is, we can, in identity, we can make it even easier for our decision makers and organizations to make those informed decisions, right? So I was on the phone with one of our banking customers recently who was saying, I just need a very simple report that tells me exactly what's going to happen when I turn on this conditional access policy, right? Mm-hmm. I need predictability. I need confidence. Mm-hmm. We provide that predictability, but we put it in a report that you have to click some buttons and, you know, it's in our conditional, it's mm-hmm. conditional access insights blade, right? So to get that report, you kind of have a few steps to get there. And so what I'm thinking about now is like, how do I get you that report like in your inbox, mm-hmm. right? Like how do I, so there's a usability aspect of some of our security stuff where it's all the right, it's all righteous. It's yeah. just that we maybe need, as an, you know, as a platform, can make it even easier for decision makers to drive, you know, to pave the way for for a smooth transition.
To be honest, those workshops you're offering are also good good thing in order to experience what would come, what right. would it mean, because then you can take a scope group of certain users that can prove that it's not very complicated, and actually they are not that often prompted for MFA anyway, because they are normally working on a trusted device, on a compliant device, and then you can build a conditional access policy where you not get prompted for MFA in such cases, only when you are coming from an external device or something like that.
Yes, and we always need to work on reducing friction. We always need to work on usability, and we need to specify that. Things like security defaults, things like managed policies, things like port-only mode, the conditional access insights, all drive to that, and we need to continuously improve that. And when we look at like the DCCC hack, which led to arguably collection problems in 2016, that hack was actually originated in a board, a nonprofit board. We're talking about 15 people using a system. They have no administrator. They have nobody's going to read a workshop. Nobody's going to, like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? There, and then we propagate from there into a think tank of about 50 people, and then there. Like the key is that like we have to recognize that an awful lot of this world is run by people that don't have CISOs,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And we have a responsibility to secure that part of the world as well. So I think we have to go. I mean, if the bar is we got you to look at the report, right? I'm without arguing that we need to do better on the usability always,
yeah.
right? But for many of our users, we have to actually reverse this mode, which is not I'm going to make it easy for you to take action. Is that I'm going to require you to take action to be insecure.
Mm.
We have to flip this paradigm yeah. where it's not, I'm going to make it easier and easier for you to, like, I'm a car guy, I like cars. And so, and I like old cars. So before 1965 in the United States, no seatbelts in cars.
Right? Yeah.
The seatbelt laws passed in 1965. So before then, you could have a seatbelt. I use this analogy a lot. But you had to go to the shop, and you had to go buy the bolts, and buy the fender washers, and figure out where to drill, and buy the webbing, and buy the bucket. You'd build yourself a seatbelt to get out of one.
Okay.
Like they were provably safer. Well, I think it was Volvo that did, actually started the innovation yeah. on it. But like, if you went from there saying, well, I'm not going to give you a bag and all the parts are in it, or I'll give you a bag and a set of instructions and all the yeah. instructions, like it won't matter. Like at the end of the day, the average person is going to buy the car and drive it as it sits.
Yeah.
Well, we have to make sure that car, when they get in it, is a safe car. Right, and we have to keep it safe for them. Mm-hmm. And so that's really the pivot that we're on right now. Microsoft yeah. broadly, everything we're doing. Now, the generative stuff is incredible for this, right? When I can actually gain insights by looking at your organization. So we've been doing a bunch of research work on this where we have the ability to generate policies based on looking at your attack patterns, your sector, your okay. existing you know, usage, and where friction is happening. Yeah. So you think about Microsoft Managed and what that is doing. Automatic rollout, and then you think about the ability to generate policies automatically. We can get to yeah. a place where we're actually saying, hey, we built this for you. This is your policy.
Yeah.
This is what we believe is the best thing you can do for your take a look at that. And then we have to make it super easy to see those reports yeah. and understand.
Your car model is interesting because you've been touching and you haven't called it out, but you've been talking about supply chain and the fact that like when we live in this digital world that's so interconnected with some companies, they use let's say an upstream HR system. So all their users are available in that system, right? Or in the case of the DCC attack with these connected organizations, NGOs,
right.
Everybody's connected, and we can't rely on everybody else to stay. So it's not only that in this car model, like it's not just one car going down the road. It's a line of cars that if one of them slows down too fast or veers into a guardrail, it's going to cause a collision of many, many cars mm-hmm. behind it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You might have your seatbelt on, but you're still going to get in a crash.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the reasons why we need to move to this paradigm shift of secure by default, bit of success, all of that in the enterprise space is specifically because we can't count on every car to use a seatbelt or mm-hmm. even have a seatbelt
mm-hmm.
anymore. We have to buckle people in across the board. If we can get to 85% buckled, then we're in a better place.
Do you have telemetry regarding, you mentioned people have to make it unsecure. It is now on by default. Do you have telemetric? How many people do this?
Turn it off?
It's about
10%.
10%?
Yeah. But those are for good reasons. Like the security defaults are potentially good reasons. Security defaults, so if we were to go from there, we could also say that 60%,
okay. Yeah.
60% of that 10% turn on a conditional access policy that is equivalent.
Okay.
Right.
Mm, yeah.
So we have people who are security defaults users who need, maybe they need a break glass account or they need, some existing. We all have security debt. We all have technical debt, right? And so people are not in this sort of perfect world where everybody can always do modern off.
Yeah.
And so for those people, they generally turn on conditional access. So, but the turn off rate for security defaults is about 10%.
But it's not leaving them exposed. They are taking extra measures because they have special situations. Not like, I 60, don't like
60% of those are taking the special measures. 40% of those are doing.
Oh, okay. Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
But again, so that's 40%. It's 4% of the overall.
We're getting into smaller numbers.
But
it's still interesting.
I mean, we are in an interesting situation where, while if you think about the number of organizations we support, the number of consumers we support, north of 200 billion authentication operations a day, right? We have to think about this a little bit like a global health problem, right? Like our job is to say, okay, how do we maximize? It's not necessarily like every corner case. It's, how do we look at big movement? How do we do big movement in terms of MFA? That's the number one thing. Like there are many, many other things. Why don't you get in front of, something fancy, voicemail hijacking to intercept voice call pins on OTP. That's voice OTP, tiny fraction of percentage, that attack, tiny fraction of percentage. It's a problem, but then you go look and say, what about password spray? Massive problem, 30% of the overall compromise, still from password spray. Turn on MFA, it goes away, right? Prevent use of bad passwords, so what you can do today in the system. So I think we think about the big movers. And ultimately what we see is as much as we will continue to, we will continue to innovate in new detections, more accurate detections. We've made huge breakthroughs in this year through our data science team. New classes of attacks that we detect, new classes of mitigations we're building, all this we're going to do. But when we look at the statistical reasons that people are not as secure in enterprises as they are in consumer, it's really basic stuff. It's impossible travel without MFA or obvious password spray, but no mitigation for it. We have made those tools available. We included MFA at every SKU starting in, 2018.
Perfect.
We turned on security defaults, even for free and trial users, starting in 2018. Making things freely available, shouting from the rooftops, talks like this and me waving my hands, doesn't do anything. Turning on security defaults, turning on managed policies, having a system self-adapt for new attack classes like we do with the authenticator, that actually has a real impact in terms of global security. And that's where the heart of our team is. We are passionately mission-driven. It's a strange composition of a team. We're very mission-driven. Everybody's focused on the same thing, which is we protect the users, the organizations, and the systems that rely on us from unauthorized access.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's our mission. And that's that's where we live and breathe. And whether it's my hunting team, which does things we investigated a lot of the stuff for SolarWinds, or our internal security team that does the PIR process and make sure that every security bug gets in. We run we do the identity bounty adjudication stuff with MSRC, or teams like Aton's that's actually kind of at the end with, okay, I'm an enterprise. Here's my risk detection. How do I get you to understand and value that? How do we help you reason over these super complex machine learning models that we're looking at over 100 aspects of every login. We're triangulating those aspects against each other, right? And so and we're going to say, okay, this is a risky session. Well, why is it a risky session? Well, there's 100 elements of this login. And it's not that your location was too far or that your browser wasn't right. It's that your location was too far and your browser wasn't right and you're typing a little fast. Right? So the generative stuff is a magical trick for this. How do I take this extremely complex model and now explain it to you in a few paragraphs? And this feature that Eitan's talking about, this is magic, right? Where you can go through and say, this is a risk because these elements are present, right? Yeah. And start to explain that and create that transparency that helps you have the trust in the system to go and use it. And again, if you're the local dentist and you've got six clinicians and a couple of dentists and some people on reception and you went and you bought email so your people could talk to the world and you got some scheduling software, you're not an identity expert. You're not a security expert. You don't have a CISO. Yeah. We can't expect those people to like go and become experts in an area that even the best funded organizations in the world are having a hard time keeping up.
And it's interesting. These people are impacted because even though, because I'm from the call-up space, I'm Teams guest users, and we have policies in our organizations and also in the customers where we implement, where we take look at the user risk for condition access also for guests. So, and then what often comes up, and it's a real challenge at the beginning, that we told them, it's not our fault. We cannot do anything. You have to go to them. If you know, you're the dentist and you want to make business with them, and they say, hey, the risk is too high. Now, what do you do? Click all of three links. They are not experts. So if they know how something like this available, that can explain it to them, that would be ideal. And yeah, it will scale with more people. Even if you have 500 people, you don't have all of the IT experts, regarding everything. So it's really, really also in these scenarios that I'm targeted more often because I'm doing collaboration. It's really great to see that this is, working, helping these people to understand, because we often have to get back. Yeah. I don't know why. So, but hey, we need to collaborate, but nobody knows what to do now.
So we could talk for hours. It's really interesting. Much to say about identity security, maybe to close. When can we expect this magical thing to happen, just to see it in the wild?
Yeah, so we've now announced it at Ignite. There's an opt-in preview that people can sign up for. I don't know if the AKA link, but we'll provide it in the show notes.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's coming. It's here.
Perfect.
The managed policy stuff started rolling out last week. Mm-hmm. We had blogged about it last week. So you're going to start seeing it now.
Okay.
So. Yeah, it already made it around in our organization because, yeah, people are looking at it and saying, hey, okay, we have to check with our customers. You have all of the telemetry and we need to take care that nothing is going wrong. Yeah. Because once you have established all of this, I think it's really, really important to not make errors because then they will lose trust and say, hey, yeah, it worked for a year. It was okay, but now I cannot access any outside systems because my risk is too high. Nobody knows how to clear it. So it's really, really great to see these things are coming to the terms.
Alex, Eitan, thank you very much for being here. It was really interesting, very informative. So thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks
for being here.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.